Hey doll, what are you doing tonight? Probably my husband. She places the plate down in front of him and then walks away. Ouch! What a mouth on you, he says with a wide grin. She doesn't even look back, just continues to walk towards the counter. The man sits back. He watches her as she makes her way around the counter to pick up another order. He lights a cigarette. He continues to watch as she hands over plates of food to customers. His gaze does not go unnoticed by her. She turns again and looks through the small window to where the cook is standing. Hey, Johnny! The cook looks up from the grill. The guy in the funny-looking suit is starting to creep me out a little. Johnny looks past her. What guy? She turns, and he is gone. He was just there. She looks to where the older lady stands near a cash register. Lucinda, did table 18 pay? Oh yeah, the red and white suit? He paid, but did not eat much. Oh well, never mind then, mumbles the waitress. The man walks faster along the sidewalk. You are going to have her, are you not? The voice in his head's louder now. Stop it. I want her. She will be mine. She's beautiful. I need her, he says as passers look at him with questioning glances. Then he looks up. A street light up ahead. The car. That familiar car. He narrows his eyes to focus better. How could he find me? How do you know it's him? No one drives a car like that. The man turns left to move into an alley. He rounds the building. Then he stops. He looks up. The restaurant. Then he hears someone coming. He presses his body against the wall. I'll see you guys tomorrow. It's her. Get her. She's yours now, says the voice. He watches as the waitress exits the rear door and makes her way to her car. The Braxton Club for Gentlemen. She grabs the brass handles and opens the large double doors wide. They are heavy from the thick glass that runs the length of the egress. She steps inside and shakes the new fallen snow from her coat. She then looks to her right, where an oak chiffonier that reflects the light from the crystal chandeliers that sparkle from overhead. To her left is a doorway. This, she assumes, leads to the inner bowels of the club that has been forbidden to women for nearly 50 years. She turns and moves towards the second set of doors. She pulls and the door opens. Then suddenly she's met by a tall, dark man wearing a gray suit. He looks down to her, barely moving his head, only his eyes. Can I be of assistance, ma'am? He drones. I need to speak with Henry Stanton, she says. May I ask who is calling upon him? Tell him it is Marla. He will know what it's about. Very well. Please wait here. The man then turns and is gone behind the oak doors. She folds her arms. Then her gaze turns to the wall of Brobdignagian portraits that decorated the foyer. She steps in front of each portrait. They are all of men. No expression of any of their countenance. My God, this place looks boring. What in the world could anyone do in a place like this? She chuckled. I probably don't want to know. She turns and decides to catch a glimpse for herself by peeping through the small window that's placed in the door. She sees Stanton sitting in a Victorian chair, speaking with a well-groomed man. Then the tall man approaches. She watches as he leans to Stanton and says a few words. Stanton looks up and to the doors. He nods his head, and the man turns back to face her location. She quickly turns back to the paintings. Excuse me, ma'am. She turns to face the human statue again. You are a guest of Mr. Stanton's. Place this to where it can be seen. He hands her a golden plate that simply reads, Guest. Now, please follow me to the guest abode. Yeah, all right. She places the badge over her left breast and follows the man behind the doors. As she turns, she glimpses the main room again. She can see shelves full of books from floor to ceiling, and a high ceiling at that. Stanton was now gone, but the man remains seated. His hair is slightly silver, but he has a youthful face. His suit is a perfect cut that fits him like a glove. Then a long hallway with more portraits. A room on the right came into view. They stop. The man turns the knob with a hand covered in a white glove. The door opens. The man steps to one side, and she slowly looks around the corner. The room, enormous as it is, looks very plain. The walls are painted white. The floor is polished wood. In the center sits only two high-back Victorian chairs. In one of the chairs sits Henry Wells Stanton. He immediately stands upon her entry. "Mr. Stanton, would either you or your guest care for a beverage?" "Yes, a sherry for me. Marla?" "No, nothing for me, thank you." The man bowed slightly and closed the door as he steps out of the room. "Good Lord, Henry, why on earth would you want to spend a day here? And you got to this room very fast." Stanton laughed. "Well, I have nothing better to do, it seems. I did not need to seek employment any longer, since the sales of my books have been increasing these days. The door opens, and the human statue enters, holding a tray with a glass of sherry on it. "Mr. Stanton, your sherry." "Oh, could I get a hot dog with..." "Madam, we do not serve hot dogs here." Stanton grinned as he took his drink. The man turns and leaves the room. "He is kind of stiff," Marla mused. "So tell me, what is it that brings you to this humdrum place?" he said, taking a sip. "I thought of your offer." "Oh?" "I realize I cannot undertake this alone." "What made you come to that realization? Mind you, I am more than glad to offer my services in any capacity necessary. But I'm still understandably curious." "A dose of reality." She looked around the room once and then back to Stanton. "I am a woman living in a world controlled by men. Well, not like unlike this place. I'm not even allowed to step into the main areas." She sits back into the chair. "And because I was born differently." "Well, Marla, it is not as cut and dry as that. However, I understand the meaning very well. We are living in a time when women are starting to move from the traditional kitchen setting to areas outside of the home. I see it coming. It is slow, but it is still almost upon us. And Marla, what you do not realize is the role in which you are playing is a crucial one. A female who is doing a supposed man's job, solving crimes and being paid to do it. And not to mention, a woman of color. My dear, life itself has been stacked against you. But you are the strongest, freest, spirited individual I have ever met. And I will be honored to follow your lead in helping to find Stone's killers. So, where do we begin?" She looked to the floor. She thought for a minute. "Stanton, I have no idea where to even begin." "Well," he begins as he took another sip of sherry, "there is a man who, shall we say, hangs around in some seedy areas. He sees a lot and knows even more." "How do you know this? Or him?" "Well, just by acquaintance, really. But when I did dabble in the investigative field, an occasion, you know, with Dylan. Oh, this was years ago, mind you. We worked a case of a missing child, and this man knew a lot. Trust me, he is more than he first appears, so do not underestimate him." "What's his name?" Let me think a minute. He leaned his head back. Richard. He used to hang around Lenny's place on Diversey Avenue. What does he look like? Last I remember, large ears. He wears spectacles. Not an old man, I would say. He would be middle-aged now. But I will go with you. No, Mr. Stanton, I need to do this on my own. I need to learn to work alone now. However, what I need from you is police reports. Find out who the suspects are. That would be the most I could ask of you. That would be the most helpful. My dear, you have it. I will contact the commissioner himself. Thank you, Mr. Stanton. Oh, and I'm sorry about the Watson comment, you know, from earlier. Oh, think nothing of it. If that's the worst a beautiful woman calls me, then I should consider myself fortunate. She smiles. It was weak and looked like a smile one forces when one has lost their best friend, but yet she wants to appear strong. She stands. Again, thank you, Mr. Stanton. Nonsense. Call me Henry. Thank you, Henry. He watches her leave the room. Stanton then stands and walks to a bookcase on the south wall. He presses a button to the right of the case. The shelves open, revealing a passageway. He walks the corridor until another door opens into the main room. He passes others as they sit and enjoy their drinks. He retakes his seat. I apologize about that, Tony. Tony looks around the room. Was that Marla? Yes. You going to help her? I believe so. Good. This could be instrumental in removing all of them from the city. You realize that? Well, I'm not sure how instrumental my part will be. Just hang in and do everything that needs to be done. You're in now. Just do it. Stanton motions for another drink. All right. I will do what needs to be done. I knew I could count on you, Stanton. Stanton takes his drink. What's the first move? I sent her along. You think Richie knows anything? Stanton took a drink. He knows everything. Good, but you need to be there. All right. He sits down his empty glass. I better leave then. He stands. Here, take this. What is it? He says as he opens the paper. A list. You will need it. Stanton stuffed the paper into his pocket and begins walking to the doors. Look, I need to speak with someone. They will get me next. I believe that hit was meant for me. Harrison the Fink says to the receiver. No, I can't stay with her. She is insane. I don't know where to go. I really should go to Lenny. I know. All right, I know. I am as good as dead either way. Those mugs were talking to the PI. I know it, but what can I do to prove it? Yeah, I know. They messed up going after the booze. You should have left it alone. Yeah, I know. I need to find someone to help me. You have to hide me. Pull some strings or something. I know. I had to be someone on the inside. All right. Oh no, my nickel's running out. Yeah, all right. He places the receiver back to the cradle. He opens the door and steps from the booth. He turns right and begins walking the sidewalk. Hey, Hammersmith. Turtle, what are you doing here? Hey. Hey, Fink, everybody's looking for you. I mean, all your buddies were killed. What gives? Hey, between you and me, did you do it? Don't be ridiculous. No, I didn't do it. Well, who did? I don't know. Hey, what's up with you, Fink? You look more nervous than usual. Yeah, well, I just need to get back. Get back to my old lady. Yeah, all right, just be careful. Thanks, I will, he says as he begins running the sidewalk. She pulls her car to a stop a few blocks away from her destination. She steps from her vehicle. She feels the pit of her stomach flip as she looks around the street. Men are hanging on every corner, from all races and colors, standing around, doing what appeared to be nothing. Women dressed to entice were also in the mix. She turns and heads north on the street. She finds the club in which Stanton had told her about. She looks up and down the sidewalk, and that's when she catches a glimpse of a short man with large, round glasses, large ears, a man looking to be near 50, maybe. She begins her walk. "Excuse me, are you, Richard?" she asks, trying not to sound so unsure of her question. The man sees her, he grins, and pushes himself off the wall in which he had been leaning on most of the day. "Maybe. Who are you?" Marla McDonald. He grinned wider. "The name is Richard, Richard Long. You can call me Dick. Pleasure to make your acquaintance." "Wait, your name is Dick Long?" "That's right, doll." "Okay, I think I'll stick to Richard." "Whatever razzes your berries, babe." "Yeah, well, I'm needing information." The little man looks around nervously. "You a flatfoot?" "Nope." "A fed?" "Nope." "I don't do questions anymore. That sort of racket can get one killed." "Is that so?" "See ya, toots." He turns to make his way back to his wall. "I have money." "Yeah, don't we all?" "$100. He stops. He turns. "Really? You a pro or something?" "Nope." "Then where or how does a black woman come by that kind of money around here? Unless she's a..." "Well, if you don't want an easy C note, I will..." She begins to turn. "No, wait. Behind here. Can't be seen talking on the street." "All right, let's go." She places her hand into her purse and grips her .32 revolver. She follows the little man between two buildings. "So tell me, how did you hear of me?" "A mutual friend." "That's ridiculous." "Oh yeah? Why do you say that?" she asks as they turn right between another set of buildings. "Because I ain't got no friends." "Well, you tell me what I need to know, then after today, you just might." Then they stop. The spot looks like a small square courtyard surrounded by buildings. "Now, quid pro quo." "Really? Quid pro quo? So you're not as dumb as you act?" The small man removes his glasses. He opens his gray sports coat and places them inside the pocket. "Look, lady, I know how to street work. You're not a cop, that much I know. And I also know you're not a reporter." The man starts to encircle her now. "No, I believe you worked with the PI that was killed." She eyes the man. "What makes you say that?" "For one thing, you're running around this neighborhood alone. No woman would do that unless they were wanting to make easy cash." "And you've kept that hand in your purse this whole time? And I don't think you're holding the $100 you owe me." "No, I believe you're clutching a pistol of some sort." "You're wearing a suit that would be more suitable for a man. You're hiding here, definitely not wanting anyone to recognize you. Am I close?" She looked around before answering. "Pretty close. The only real question in my mind is, who sent you to me?" "Look, you want the note or not?" He grinned. "Lady, I own this little stretch of town. That $100 you have doesn't mean a lot to me. I would like to know who sent you, though." "Then what? I guess we'll see." "It was me, Richard." Both Marla and he turned their heads to see Henry Stant standing in the alley. "Henry, what are you doing here?" asked Marla. "We need to find out who killed John Stone and why." Stanton then moved closer. "You followed me?" she asked. "I did. I needed to make sure he would help you." "Why would I?" asked Richard. "Because I know as much as you do." "Hey, we never speak of that." "Then let's have a chat." "All right, you want the scoop? Here it is. And this is all I know, mind you. The three mugs that was hit pulled a heist on Lucky O'Sullivan. They made a booze grab or something." "But why?" she asked. "I don't know why." "Why don't you ask them? Oh, that's right. They're dead. Lucky sent someone to take care of the problem. However, your boy was with them, he wasn't supposed to be, but he was. Word is, it was on the inside. Inside of what and why was he? She pressed. Hey, I'm not psychic. All I know is what's handed down to me. However, there was one man short. Henry looked to Marla, she then looked back to Richard. And inside. His voice lowers to a near whisper. Police headquarters. What? Who? She asked. You know if any of this gets out, I'm a dead man, right? Don't worry, Richie. I'll keep everything hushed. Besides, it's a risk we're willing to take, Stanton assured. Oh, you're funny, Stanton. The man that narrowly escaped, he is the one you need. Richard looked around nervously. Harris, the Fink Hammersmith. And how is it you know this? Again, Richard looked around. I just got off the phone with him. Henry and Marla again shared a look. Did he say why Stone was there? Pressed Henry. He is scared. He's not wanting to say anything just yet. But he and the boys did take the booze. And he pauses for a minute. They were talking to a PI, and they're all dead now. You do the math on that one. You think Fink did it? Asked Marla. No, Fink is a lot of things, and Coward is the most of it. How can we contact him? Does he have an address? She presses. Let me tell you both something. If you press this, if you uncover something that should stay covered, then you both will probably end up taking a concrete bath. We will take our chances, she said. All right, I want an invite to your funeral. Give me a pen and paper. Marla quickly reaches into her purse, pulling out the paper and the $100. Here. She handed them the paper and the $100 bill. He looks her up and down. Keep it. You look like you need it more than I do. He takes the paper and scribbles something on it. Now beat it before the two of you get me killed. He reaches back into his jacket and pulls his glasses out. All right, Richie. And thanks, we owe you, says Stanton. Darn right you do. Now scram.